The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
It's in its 15th year. The International Symposium on Translational Research in Oncology is back once again in person after COVID, and it begins this Wednesday at the Herbert Park Hotel. It's looking at all the novel therapies that we sometimes hear about. Well, Professor John Crown is a consultant medical oncologist at St. Vincent's Hospital, and he's hugely involved in the preparation for this event. John, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
First of all, there are so many experts coming in, and it must be good to have them all in person rather than at the other end of a Zoom.
It is fantastic, Pat. I can tell you this meeting is really an extraordinary meeting. People look at the schedule and say, this meeting is taking place in Ireland. I mean, how can you attract so many top quality people? And it's because the meeting is unique. It's a relatively small meeting, relatively small audience, lots of opportunity for the experts to interact and over a cup of coffee, or perhaps in the evening over a beer or over dinner, to hear, you know, advances from fields which are not necessarily the ones they're directly involved in, and to cross-fertilize ideas. Translational research refers to that kind of area in research where we've got all these brilliant scientists on one side doing things, and then we've got doctors on the other side doing things with patients. That kind of gray zone in the middle, when things first transition from coming out of the lab showing promise as possibly new treatments or new tests for cancer patients, that's the translational area, and that's exactly where this meeting is focused. That's what I think makes it unique compared to other meetings. We have a Nobel Prize winner speaking at the meeting, Dr. Aaron Chichenover. We have Dr. Dennis Lehman, the man whose work has saved hundreds of thousands of lives of women with breast cancer because of his help and his work in developing Herceptin and four or five derivative drugs that have since come on since that. We have speakers from UCLA, from Stanford, from Yale, from London, the continent. We have multiple speakers coming from drug companies presenting the newest pipeline developments. It's a really exciting time. And really, what's really great, Pat, on Wednesday night, we have a meeting that's open to the public. It's a breast cancer meeting open to breast cancer patients, their relatives, their carers, anyone who's interested. Wednesday night, 6 p.m., Herbert Park Hotel in Ballsbridge. Dr. Sarah Hurwitz, who's a wonderful, wonderful young oncologist from UCLA, has really become one of the leading dynamic investigators in new breast cancer treatments. And Sarah has kindly agreed to make herself available to make a presentation to patients to take their questions. And I would really urge anyone who's interested, anybody from the lay public, patients, carers, relatives, if you want to hear the latest advances, and specifically metastatic, secondary breast cancer, cancer which has spread, the kind of cancer which is often sometimes felt to be neglected in research terms, the kind of cancer which sadly usually ends in death, although not always. We're starting to see some chinks of light now and seeing some patients getting long remissions and maybe being cured.
Now, I notice on the agenda there's mention of CAR T therapies. Funny, last week we were talking to Professor Luke O'Neill about how CAR T therapies, which started in cancer treatment, have now been expanded to work in autoimmune disease. So what is new from the cancer point of view in the CAR T therapies?
Well, I think the big issue with CAR T therapy at the moment is trying to see can it become more generalizable. It has developed a very well established role now in the treatment of certain kinds of blood cancers, and that's an area of intense interest. It has been slower to diffuse into the more common, you know, adult solid tumors, breast cancer, pancreas cancer, prostate cancer, but it's the subject of great investigation. And I'm delighted to say that one of the leaders in this field is Dr. Roisin O'Carroll, a young Irish oncologist working in Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York, and she's one of the speakers at our meeting. So there will be an opportunity, I think, to really hear the latest advances in this field.
The CAR T involves some sort of genetic engineering, and how different is that from immunotherapy?
Well, it's a form of immunotherapy, but it basically involves most of the immunotherapies that we're using right now are antibodies. So basically, you know, we had it wrong for many years. Scientists and doctors thought that the immune system wasn't very good for fighting cancer, and we thought the reason it wasn't was because nature or God or evolution, whatever one believes, had allowed the immune system to develop to treat foreign invaders. It was for fighting germs.
Now, I remember, John, we used to talk about this years ago when you said, as you say, the orthodoxy was that the immune system didn't work against cancer cells because the immune system was designed to detect dying cells, cells that were being attacked by something, whereas cancer cells were growing, thriving, and therefore the immune system didn't spot them.
Yeah, the immune system has normal brakes built into it to stop it going rogue. If we didn't have those brakes, more people would have rheumatoid arthritis and psoriasis and colitis and all of these immune system diseases. So the brakes, basically, to simplify it, they pick up when the immune system is making things too inflamed and then tells it to back off. So it's programmed to recognize cells which are too inflamed. But it's not good at telling the difference between cells that are too inflamed and cancer cells. And that's why this funny little quirk occurs that cancer cells have had a degree of protection from the immune system. And the real advance that was made was the discovery of the immune checkpoints, these blocks, these breaks, and that you could turn them off with drugs called immune checkpoint inhibitors. And I can tell you, every year for the last 10 years, there's just been nothing but good news in this field. The number of cancers where they work is increasing. The results of the cancers where they're being studied is increasing. One of the great, great young investigators, and this is another young Irish oncologist, Dr. Patrick Ford, who works in Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, and he's speaking at our conference, and he's going to tell us how, I mean, I would have been pinching myself 10 years ago if somebody said, Crown, you're going to be treating lung cancer with immune system drugs. And here we are doing it every day of the week. And Pat is giving us a lecture on how we might be able to expand the benefits of that to patients with earlier stage lung cancer, people where the cancer maybe can be removed, maybe is just short of being able to be removed, and how we can give these drugs to those patients and improve the outcome rather than just giving it to the patients with widespread disease.
Now, there's one I'm trying to get my mind around what it actually means. This session, targeting difficult to drug genes for cancer therapy. What does that mean?
Well, we were sort of lucky in some ways. There were, back in the, probably about 20, 25 years ago, it became recognized that there were a couple of genes which were unusual, which were abnormal and fairly specific to cancers. And one was a thing called a gene which was found on a chromosome called the Philadelphia chromosome. And that was abnormal in patients that had a particularly awful kind of cruel kind of leukemia called chronic myeloid leukemia. And when I used to be a hematology registrar 35 years ago, I think I was about 9 at the time, we used to have patients with this awful, awful disease. And they all had about 2 years of relatively good health with abnormal blood counts. And then after 2 to 3 years, everything went horribly wrong. They developed very acute, awful disease and died. And it was discovered that there was a specific gene that they actually had which drove the malignancy, and a very patient process of work resulted in a drug which turns off that gene, and that disease has been completely transformed. Now, there are other genes which are harder to get at. There are genes which may mutate in different ways. They may not be present in all kinds of cancers. There are some which, by their nature, it's hard to deal with them. If a gene makes something very aggressive, very malignant, if it makes a new, like, little gate on the surface of the cell, which picks up receptors, which, like, feed the cell and make it very aggressive, sometimes you can actually knock that off relatively simply, but, you know, brilliant scientists are able to knock it off fairly simply. But there's another gene, P53. P53 is a gene which actually has an anti-cancer effect. And when your P53 gene becomes mutated, you lose the normal anti-cancer effect of that gene. So what they're trying to do with genes like that is to develop treatments which actually make the gene work better, to try and make it work normally. And that's real, real complicated. But there's some little glimmers of hope now for a few of those genes that are widespread, frequently seen in cancer, and which we now see little rays of light. By the way, we're not talking about genes which people inherit from their, we don't mean genes that you inherit from your family. That's a different thing. These are genes that occur in the cancer as part of the process of malignancy. Yeah.
Is there any more fundamental understanding of why people get cancer in the first place and different cancers? The idea you can have two people who've got pretty similar lifestyles, pretty similar genetic backgrounds, siblings, for example, one get cancer, the other does not.
The development of cancer in the first place is an interplay between genetics, environment, and sometimes just bad luck. If you consider that in our bodies every day, millions and millions of cells divide, and one cell will divide and form two cells, and those two cells, et cetera, will form two more, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, thousands and thousands of genes have to split accurately and reform accurately every time that happens. So you can imagine that occasionally a mistake will occur. There'll be a little slip-up. One of the genes will knock off and have what we call a mutation. Now, some mutations result in the death of that cell, which is good, because you want the cell that has a mutation to just die. You don't want that cell to propagate. So if the cell over the course of a long lifetime requires more mutations, it may reach a critical stage where so many mutations have occurred that the cell becomes abnormal and becomes cancerous. And that is why, in general, we all know this without exceptions, but in general, cancer is primarily a disease of the middle-aged and elderly. As we get older, our risk of getting cancer gets higher. Now, some things can tip the balance. If you smoke cigarettes, there is no activity you can do which exposes you to as many mutation-causing chemicals as inhaling tobacco smoke into your lungs. And that is a rich, rich source of mutations. Sunlight, sunburn can do it as well. Some viruses can do it. We know alcohol can do it in some cases. So there is an interplay. Some people, increasingly, it's recognized that some people do have a genetic susceptibility to cancer. The classic one that we've been studying for many years is breast cancer. And it's really been recognized in recent years that beyond the two original genes, which everybody has heard about because of the Angelina Jolie story at the time when she, you know, very bravely went public with her decision to have two mastectomies because she carried a terrible gene giving her a risk of breast cancer. Beyond those genes, in the last 2 years, and great work was done by another great Irish scientist working in the Mayo Clinic, Fergus Crouch, who has identified that there, in fact, are a host of genes which can predispose to breast cancer. In general, breast cancers are sporadic. They're generally not related to your family. Somebody who does not have a family history of breast cancer should not ignore a breast lump because they don't have a family history. You must see your doctor. Somebody who does have breast cancer will often think, what did I do wrong? This must be my fault because nobody in my family had it. It's not like that. Sometimes it's just pure bad luck. A little cell made a little division. It did the wrong thing. It wasn't your fault or stress in your family or stress at work or because whatever. These are all things which can happen. You can, of course, reduce your chance of getting these mutations by not being very obese, by not smoking, by not drinking alcohol to excess, by not having sunburn, etc. Interesting, just 10 days ago, a very interesting piece of research was presented at the European Society of Medical Oncology, which suggested that for lung cancer, it may be a little more complicated than that, that the genes certainly do program your predisposition to getting cancer, but then having high levels of inflammatory cells, which might be predisposed to by air pollution, can also tip some people into the direction of getting lung cancer.
A couple of things. I remember John on News Talk years ago when he said it was unlikely his children would have near the same exposure to cancers, and here we are. True to his word, we are on an upward curve to cures. So keep up the good work, John, says that texter. Another one wants to know, will the Wednesday night talk on metastatic cancer be streamed online for those who are outside Dublin?
I'm afraid not. We did not have the resources to do that at that stage. I am sorry, but that's a good point. I will again ask if there's some way of doing it, but it's at the moment it's not, I'm afraid.
All right, because someone could actually just put it up on their phone as they sit in the audience anyway.
We could try and do that. Thank the caller. I will again address that we were for the last 2 years doing the meeting virtually, but we were so, I think, delighted to have everybody back in person again. But I'll find out if we do have an option for doing that.
Very good. And if you find out, you let us know and we let our listeners know. Professor John Crown, consultant medical oncologist at St. Vincent's Hospital. Thank you very much for joining.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.